Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team appreciates you joining us this fine day in America on our 16th anniversary show, and we're proud Americans. So here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with the guys who started Frontlines of Freedom, Phil Tower, Josh Reimeyer, and yours truly, and then co-host Skip Coriel will interview me. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Phil Tower, who at the time was the guy who ran what became our flagship station, Wood Radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Welcome back, bro.
It's good to be back with you, Colonel.
And Josh Reimeyer, who was the guy who, he sort of held my hand while I learned about radio and co-host, and he's the show's geek and co-founder and all that stuff. So yeah, we're the founders. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you, Colonel. Always a pleasure.
Josh lived locally and went to Grand Valley State University and worked for Phil at Wood while he was in college. Josh and I knew each other because our families went to the same church. Then Josh graduated and went to the Air Force. And it all started when you came back off active duty. Do I remember that right, Josh?
Correct, Colonel. Yes. While I was on active duty, I was actually also working in Los Angeles with Clear Channel Radio, now iHeartMedia, at the LA cluster in Burbank, where they had a progressive station and a conservative station. And I got to work on a military talk show that was live on Sunday nights. And that was a phenomenal experience, which really was the genesis of creating later on, shortly thereafter, Frontlines of Freedom.
Yeah. So you came back and you did sort of work for Phil again a little bit. I don't think it was a full-time regular thing. Am I right?
You're correct. Yep.
And apparently the two of you talked about it. All I remember is that one or the other of you, I think Josh, called up one day and said something like, we decided we want to do a military talk radio show on Wood Radio. Will you host it? One of you two said that out of the clear blue sky. Do I remember that accurately? That's what I remember.
I believe that was me. And I must have asked you, Phil, for permission to do the Veterans Day special in 2006.
Yeah, I think that's the way it happened. And to me, it was a no-brainer. What can I say?
Well, I do know this. I have a good friend who, like me, is a Vietnam vet, and he's an evangelist. His name's Dave Reaver. And when Dave is offered something that he wants to accept, his favorite answer, which I used, was, let me pray about that. Amen. Okay. And it all
started. I've heard you say that many times, Denny.
Yes, you have. That was the first time, however. So I give Dave Reaver the credit for it. And then all I know is that Josh, working with Phil, started putting some things together. And I tried to learn, well, you guys were both mentoring me about what the heck you do with a radio show. But it seemed to work, didn't it? And it was the idea that if we did a special show like on Veterans Day, and then it was nominated for an award. Do I remember that right?
That's correct, Colonel. It won a best in category for special programming. It's an MAB, Michigan Association of Broadcasters Award for Medium Market Radio, which was fantastic. But on the local level, Phil authorized that we could air it twice that weekend, which was Veterans Day weekend, and it did gain two local sponsorships as well. So that really set the table that there could be success with a regular program like this, and we just had to come up with a name for it. We had buy-in from Phil, and then Phil, who were the other gatekeepers at Wood Radio that needed to sign off?
Well, I think the primary gatekeeper was Skip Essick, who at the time was the general manager market president, and he loved the idea. The sales team loved the idea, and it took off from there. It was an opportunity where we could create our own local show and have that flourish locally in Grand Rapids. And of course, that was the springboard for national syndication.
I remember sitting in a couple of meetings, the three of us, along with Henry Caponia, who was the sales manager at the time, just explaining things and how it would work so that we could get his buy-in and sign off, because the station would have to give up an hour of time that it may have been making money on in a different way with a different sponsor or local advertiser, that we needed to show them that this is going to be beneficial to the bottom line of the radio station.
And I was sitting there in awe. I had no idea what you guys were talking about. But it just goes to show you, you actually can learn even when you get older. Because I remember Josh coaching me through doing interviews. You know, getting me to talk's not a problem, but getting me to do it in an organized way that makes sense on radio That was totally new. And I guess you guys must be good because it worked.
We've done it a few times. And in the end, a lot of credibility, a lot of authenticity. And really, it just comes down to telling stories that people are interested in. And the whole concept behind the show, which Josh knows, was, you know, lifting that veil of secrecy and telling the powerful stories about the men and women who serve the country and sharing unique experiences, really demystifying the military, if you will.
Well, the one thing I knew I wanted, I'd heard obviously some military talk radio shows, and most of the ones I'd listened to was two sergeants talking together about what we did with the privates and how we made them do push-ups, or two privates talking about how they got away with not doing what the sergeant wanted. Now, I didn't want to go there. And apparently you two agreed with taking a higher level look at things, because I didn't have any trouble selling that idea. And we've had generals, admirals, cabinet members, privates, corporals, kids, congressmen, senators. We had no trouble getting a lot of people's perspective on things over the years. And it all happened because somehow we all agreed to take that approach, as opposed to the sitting around the campfire shooting the bull about how we got over something on the sergeant. And it worked, didn't it?
It did. And Phil Tower, I mean, this is a mutual admiration society meeting here on the program today. But Denny, you're fortunate that Phil, one of the best minds in talk radio, was running Wood Radio at the time. And he was our gatekeeper, and he became a champion for the show. And then later on, when we started syndicating the show, we had to get past all the other similar gatekeepers, of which now we are on nearly 200 radio stations. But by working together with this team, it really ended up being an ideal group to get the show refined, get it on air, get it going, and then about 5 years in, to bring it to syndication, which we've now been in for over 11 years.
You know, we're about out of time, but you just described a really good, how much better can life be when you're working with people you like and respect, you work together, and you're doing something productive? I mean, how much better does life get? But guys, we got just a couple of minutes. Phil, what's your thought? Where do you see Frontlines of Freedom going in our 17th year?
Well, I just want to recognize that 17 years in broadcast is like dog years. You know, it's probably somewhere close to 96 years. And I want to acknowledge that you and Josh have put a lot of work, a lot of hard work, sweat, equity, tears and more into the show. And it's worth celebrating. 17 years is really laudable. We're celebrating closing in on 200 affiliates. I would just say, in the end, all great spoken word radio is engaging because it tells great stories, stories worth hearing, stories often worth repeating. And when you can be authentic and a little bit vulnerable and yet tell good stories, you win always. And that's the simple wisdom in your 17th year. Colonel, you have your marching orders.
Thank you, sir. Josh, your thoughts?
Colonel, I do look forward to crossing that 200 affiliate threshold. I know we have some great guests coming up on the show. There may be some recurring content contributors that we'll start to see more of in the coming months. And I also want to take the time to celebrate not only the 16th anniversary of Frontlines of Freedom, but your 82nd birthday, as well as your 59th year anniversary of your graduation from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. So a lot to celebrate, and we will look toward the future with Frontlines with an eye on who can carry the baton for the years to come. But by no means is the Colonel giving up the microphone. I think that's one of those things that it'll be like Charlton Heston from your cold, dead hand. So, but we do have to make plans for an eventual change of command.
Yes, we do. What a pleasure it is to share an interview with two of the guys that I like and respect most in this world. Phil, thank you for the great friend you've been and still are.
And likewise, Colonel, just so grateful for your professionalism and your friendship and your dedication. I can't stress that enough. And it's really what makes working in radio great, when you can work with people who love what they do. And Josh is certainly one of those as well, too. Might I say, as my radio son, fairly well trained way back in the day.
Well said. And Josh, Frontlines of Freedom wouldn't exist today if it weren't for you. I'm glad we're friends and teammates.
And I share that sentiment, Denny. It is a two-way street. And thank you for being a reliable and professional partner week in and week out. 16 years in the making, Front Lines of Freedom is finally an overnight success.
This is Colonel Denny Gillow on Front Lines of Freedom. Now it's time, troops, for you to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM.
Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. Now it's time to learn a few things about our host, Colonel Denny Gillum. Colonel, this is fantastic. I love interviewing you. I love talking to you. You are so fantastic. Oh, so many wonderful things. I'm sucking up now, aren't I, Colonel?
Yes, you are. But, you know, we've been friends
Keep
for
going.
So long. We know how to abuse each other. And yes, you don't stop.
All right. Well, Colonel, if we're going to start, let's start at the very beginning. Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in Sacramento, California, and 6 months before Pearl Harbor. So I was alive during all of World War II, but I don't remember much. I was raised in Los Angeles. I lived there from about third grade on. That's home. That's where my family lived. So I'm a California boy. Enjoyed it. Loved it. I liked living there. I'm not very proud of the state right now.
You know, you moved out and the whole place went to hell in a handbasket, Colonel.
You know, that nicely put, Skip. I appreciate that.
Okay. So if you move back, maybe you could fix things.
And that probably won't happen.
All right. All right. Well, Colonel, you and I have something in common. You were in Boy Scouts, and so was I. My dad was my scoutmaster, and I enjoyed it. So how was scouting for you?
I'm the firstborn and oldest and only boy. I have three younger sisters. So Boy Scouts was where I hung out with guys, though there's some guys in the neighborhood I hung out with too, but many of them, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Explorers. I was very active in it, absolutely loved it. I had a goal of being Eagle Scout. I didn't make it, but about the time I was working on it, they came up with a parallel to Eagle Scout, Explorer Bronze, Gold, and Silver. And I made Explorer Silver, which is theoretically equivalent to Eagle Scout, except no one's ever heard of it. So, but I loved scouting. I played leadership and I grew a lot, learned a lot there.
Well, you know, it's a good gateway into the military because it's a little bit like that.
Yes.
And then, Colonel, you were in ROTC in high school. So I'm seeing a pathway. You're starting to figure out where you're going to go, Colonel.
Yeah, I'm the first person in my direct line to ever wear the military uniform. My grandfather, my dad's father, was a cop, was killed in the line of duty. My dad's brother was an FBI agent. My son just retired as a cop. I was a reserve deputy sheriff for a while. But yeah, for something about high school ROTC really attracted me and just set me up. I wanted to go to West Point. It took me a couple of years to get there because my grades weren't all that good initially. But eventually I made it and was really happy.
Well, Colonel, I can relate to that as well. My grades weren't all that good either. And I ended up in the Marine Corps. But, I've read that General George Pickett, he didn't have the best grades either. So you and I were in pretty good company.
Yeah, it's amazing how the superstars aren't always completely superstars just because they were academically. That said, I wouldn't mind being a little smarter than I am.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. We are speaking with the Big Kahuna, the commanding officer of Front Lines of Freedom, Colonel Denny Gillum. Now, Colonel, you got interested in the Army. How did you make that big decision?
I really don't know, but probably it was that the Army ROTC unit at my high school was so good with such a good sergeant running it that I think that it just clicked that that's really what I wanted to do. And the fact that I had two other really close friends, and they felt the same way I did. And the three of us held most of the leadership positions in it as we moved up through the thing. So the exposure was there and it worked. And I just knew it was the right thing to do. And it was right for me.
So you never didn't seriously consider any of the other branches then?
No. I thought about the Navy. I thought going to sea and being at sea for 6 months or 9 months, and that didn't appeal to me. And I'm a face-to-face kind of guy. If I'm going to get, and I'm going to be involved with people that I'm hostile with, I want to be able to see them and face them and analyze them and deal with them. So, no, an Army infantry was exactly right for me.
Colonel, from how did you get to West Point? I've read your book, The Smiling Ranger, so I know the answer to this, but you know, you mentioned that your grades weren't all that good. How did you manage to get into West Point with not the best stellar grades?
Well, I went to a junior college for a year, and I figured I'd get my grades up there. Unfortunately, the second semester, my grades were about as bad as they could possibly be. So then I went to a military junior college for a second year, and that structure and the fact that I knew this was my last chance, I got my grades up there and got an appointment. So nothing like knowing it's now or never. That did it.
And so you got focused.
Yes, very focused. And I really enjoyed it at West Point. It was hard. It was tough. But I loved the focus, the duty on our country, getting things done, the structure. I just totally clicked with the culture and the value set. And I did fine academic. I think I tell everybody I graduated at the very top of the bottom third of my class. But I was delighted. I wanted to be branched infantry. That was what I got. Volunteered for Airborne and Ranger School. I really wanted to go to those because I was afraid of heights. And I figured if jumping out of airplanes and rappelling off mountains wouldn't fix that, nothing would. And while I'm still afraid of heights, I can control that fear very well. So all that worked.
Well, and you know, West Point, it's different. I went to a civilian college, a Christian college, and that was really nice. I made a lot of good friends. But in a military college, it's different because you end up serving with those people later on. And I've noticed that many of the expert guests that we have on Frontlines of Freedom, they're former classmates of yours, aren't they?
Yeah, and. Indeed, I see emails from classmates every single day. Some of those guys are getting old, though, so I got to be careful about them. Actually,
that is the best case scenario, Colonel.
It is. The coolest old thing that ever happened was my first duty station, where I got there. I graduated from Ranger School in the end of January 1964. On the 1st of January 1965, I reported to Fort Carson, Colorado, and was given command of a mechanized rifle platoon, which was a dream job. That March, the Army, the government decided we were going to start sending combat troops into Vietnam. I volunteered for Vietnam. That June, I got orders to go to Vietnam. And that June, I got set up on a blind date.
And a blind date, huh?
A blind date. 2 weeks later, I proposed marriage. 2 weeks after that, she said yes. Oh, she was a school teacher going to a summer seminar in Colorado Springs. And 1 week after she said yes, the seminar was over and she disappeared. A month later, I took leave before deploying, drove out to Ohio to meet her family and to leave her in my car, and went away. I went to Vietnam for a tour. Very hard-charging year, 6 months as a platoon leader and 6 months as an aide to a general. Came back. We got married.
She waited for you?
She did. And by the way, I don't recommend the meet somebody 2 weeks later, propose marriage. I don't recommend that. But we're at 56 years right now, so I guess it worked. Then yeah. I got sent to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where I got promoted to captain, was given command of an airborne rifle company. And 1 year later, the whole division got deployed to Vietnam. So I was gone again. So I contend that one of the reasons my marriage has worked so well is because two of the first 3 years we were a couple, I was gone. So I wasn't there to ruin the cool impression I made.
Yeah, well, ignorance is bliss, I guess. And absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
Yes, it does.
Well, Colonel, that sounds great. So we've got you all the way up through Vietnam. When we come back in the next segment, we're going to talk more about, well, what did you do after Vietnam? This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break. But stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Marine Vet Skip Coriel. We are continuing our interview with our show's host, the gracious, the magnanimous, the military genius, Colonel Denny Gillum. How do you like that, Colonel? Can I get a raise for that?
You certainly are making it. Keep thinking that way. You know, okay. You know, when I came back from my second tour in Vietnam, I was one of the only soldiers who had had two tours in Vietnam with American troops. And I had 7 awards for heroism. So I was selected for a very fast promotion to major. And I asked to be sent to graduate school, and I was. And when you go to graduate school, you got to have a utilization tour. So they sent me to the Army ROTC unit at Stanford, which was being thrown off campus because of anti-Vietnam War testimony and stuff like that. It was about 2.5 years left when I got there. For a while, I ran the unit, and then they brought in a lieutenant colonel to run it for the last 2 years to do the phase out. And it turns out he hated me.
And how is that possible?
I've known you for years, Colonel. I tried slapping him around a little bit to see if, but he did. Well, and he made it
character
clear
defect on his part, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. He knew he had to get out of the Army and retire as soon as it was done. And he made it clear to me he was going to ruin my career because he didn't like me. And he wrote reports that would do that. Well, something else was happening at that time in my life. My wife and I had been invited to a Bible study. There's an Officers Christian Fellowship is a group that basically does home Bible studies. We got invited to a Bible study. And I was always somebody who prayed in the morning when I got up. And normally when I prayed that the Lord would show me how to kill the colonel that was going to ruin my career or have somebody else kill him. And one morning I woke up praying that God would bless him or show me how to bless him. And it shocked the heck out of me. I went back and prayed it again and said the same thing again. Apparently, God had touched my life. And indeed, when I started pursuing that, he had indeed changed my life. And he touched my wife's life almost exactly the same time, within a week. So our lives changed at that point. We became very committed Christians. And at that same time, my wife became pregnant with our first child, our son, David. So that was a pretty exciting time. And coincidentally, I appealed the nasty reports he wrote, and the appeal was not approved. But somehow, I got promoted on time and offered command on time, like it wasn't there.
Hmm.
I have no explanation other than God being involved to explain that. But let's just say that time at Stanford was an incredibly interesting time in my life.
Mm-hmm. And miracles can happen, even in the military.
They sure did for me.
We are speaking with Colonel Denny Gillum all about his wonderful life. Now, Colonel, what happened after that? You had a few more military tours, and then you got out.
Yeah. Well, because I had been promoted fast and was on all the right lists, I was selected to go to the Armed Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia, which was a really cool time. Lots of funny stories I could tell about that, but it was very educational. The thing that you'd appreciate most, Skip, is that it was an all-services unit, and the guy second in command was a Marine colonel who was really hard. I mean, he didn't bend anything for anybody. But we had a costume party around Halloween or something, and he showed up dressed like a jerk. I mean, he had everybody in stitches. It lasted that one night, and then he went back to being himself. But I can still see that day. Then we stationed in Germany for 3 years. And since I had taken German in college, that was easier for me. Turns out that I thought I also knew the culture in Germany. I had to learn that, but at least I knew the language. I was second in command of a mechanized infantry battalion.
What year was that?
74, 5, 6.
So height of the Cold War. You were over there,
yep.
You know, keeping the Ruskies honest.
Well, it was. And it turns out that our unit was going to be the reserve. If Russia attacked, we were the reserve to go wherever we were needed. So I asked the intelligence guys, what would be the enemy unit you think we'd be fighting? And they did their thing, came back. It was the 123rd Rifle, whatever it is. And I said, okay, can you get me the names of the leaders of that unit? Well, they came back with the names, and all of them had the same first name. It was Fanu. So I asked them about that. Turns out Fanu means first name unknown.
Okay. Oh, boy. A little bit of levity there.
Yes.
All right. Well, what happened after that, Colonel?
Well, then they brought us back to the United States, and I was assigned to Tampa, MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida, where I was assigned as a Mideast war planner for 4 years. And that was incredibly interesting, since I knew a bit about the Mideast. I'd visited Israel and some other places. It was really cool. Our mission was to be prepared to reinforce American forces in the Mideast if there was a war over there. So that was my job, doing the planning for that. And while I was there, I got promoted to lieutenant colonel, which absolutely shocked me. I didn't think that was going to happen. When it was over, they told me that they weren't sure what to do with me. And so they told me they wanted me to run an ROTC unit. And they offered me Michigan Tech. Well, that's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yeah.
And my wife said, we'll go anywhere where they have good winters. So I called up to Michigan Tech and talked to a sergeant and said, Sarge, what are summers like up there? And he said, Colonel, I can't tell you because I overslept this year and missed summer.
Yes.
So I thanked you for saving
me. Happened on a Thursday.
And I declined it. And they gave me the University of Tampa, right where I was already stationed. So I got to stay in the same place, enjoy the nice weather. And the next time I got a call, they said, Colonel, you've waited too long. You're going to Wyoming, Michigan. Wyoming's a suburb of Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I was an Army advisor to the Michigan National Guard. I didn't want to come here because I'd only been to Michigan once in my life. That was the Detroit riots. But I found out that all of Michigan is not like Detroit. Even Detroit wasn't like Detroit. And the West Michigan culture is awesome. It really is wonderful. And we fell in love with the season. So I retired from the Army so they wouldn't move me. So I've been living here, well, almost 40 years. I love it here. My son grew up. He just retired from the local police department. I found a number of different jobs, places where they put up with me at least briefly. And life is fun and interesting.
Well, you met me, Colonel.
You know, that's interesting. I think we met as soccer refs, didn't we, Skip?
Yes. We did, on the battlefield, actually.
And while we were shooting the bull, we found out that neither one of us were really afraid of carrying a firearm.
Yeah, that's true.
We suddenly had that in common, too. And we also got used to having people call us names. We learned that in the military.
Yes, yeah. And we had some good times. And, you know, that's really, it's a little bit like being in a foxhole together. I mean, refereeing a soccer game together, because the parents are screaming and yelling at you. You know, no matter what call you make, half the people there hate your guts.
That's so, right. And
we had to stick together.
And for some reason, we did.
Yes, we did.
And it's amazing where that friendship went, because then the show started and I was trying to find a jarhead that I knew that I would help me make things a little bit more interesting, and there you were, and you.
Well, that's why they call us.
Yeah, I think it's been like 10 years that you've been with us.
And yeah, it's been close to that. The few, the proud the Marines, right?
Apparently, because it works. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but working together has been awesome. We've got some other great members on the team, but you know, what else would you rather do than work with people you like, doing something you enjoy and think is good for the community, for the yeah. country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have fun doing it. I mean, you know, when we started to get working together, Skip and I, we were in the local radio station. They gave us a studio that we could do our work in. Then came COVID. We got thrown out. Well, at the time, I couldn't even spell Zoom. But one of the geeks from the radio station came and put it on my computer and taught me how to use it. And now we record on Zoom. But Skip and I have been working together through all that kind of stuff. And Frontlines of Freedom is, it's awesome. And there's certainly some goofy things going on in our country that will keep us without a problem finding topics to discuss. Of that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, Colonel, we're about out of time for this segment, but I can tell you, I like to think of Frontlines of Freedom as an asset to our country, part of the solution instead of part of the problem. So, you know, Colonel, you built a good thing, a great thing, and you've done at least as much service for our country outside of the military as you did inside the military.
Well, you know, I can't do nothing. You know, some people say, I just want to go fishing and play golf. That would drive me nuts. I mean, fishing's fun and golf is fun, but I have to have something productive to do. And yeah. Frontlines of Freedom is a delight. We have a great team. We're accomplishing something that I think is good for our country. What more do you want? You know, your family's good. Health is good. That makes life good.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break. But stay in the area. We will be right back.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gill, and this is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome questions from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Navy vet and Army dad Peter sends congratulations on the show's 16th anniversary. He's been listening for about 10 years, and he loves the show.
Thanks, Peter. I appreciate your support. It's been an enjoyable and interesting 16 years, and we're not done yet.
And Navy vet Mary Beth enjoyed the interview with a female Navy veteran. Mary Beth had many similar experiences.
Thank you for your service, Mary Beth. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, on 9 June 1863, the largest cavalry battle of the Civil War was fought at Brandy Station, Virginia. Confederate General Robert E. Lee was preparing for another invasion of the North and placed General Jeb Stuart's cavalry at Brandy Station to screen the rest of his army as it started toward the Blue Ridge Mountains. Stuart used this time at Brandy Station to stage a grand parade to show off his dashing troopers to local residents. Unbeknownst to Stuart, his pompous display was observed by Union troops under the command of General Alfred Pleasonton. On June 9, Pleasonton struck the surprised rebels in a two-pronged assault. After initially falling back, the Confederates eventually rallied, and the battle raged all day long. The battle's key moment came when Union troops headed to seize Fleetwood Hill, an elevation from which the Yankees could shell the entire battlefield. Confederate Lieutenant John Carter struggled to mount a cannon on the hill and fired a single shot that stopped the Union troopers in their tracks. The Yankee officer leading the charge suspected the Confederates had a line of guns sitting just over the top of the hill, when in fact it was a single gun with barely enough powder for a single shot. Carter's heroic act saved the day for Stuart. The move bought time for the Confederates, and they held the hill. The battle continued until late afternoon, with many spectacular cavalry charges and saber fights, in addition to hand-to-hand combat by dismounted cavalry. In the end, Stuart's forces held the field. Confederate cavalry had been seen as unbeatable, but its invincibility was shattered on that muggy Virginia day.
It makes me glad I don't know how to ride a horse that well. I wouldn't want to be a cavalry charge. On June 6, 1918, the first large-scale battle fought by American soldiers in World War I began in Belleau Wood. In late May, the third German offensive of the year penetrated the Western Front to within 45 miles of Paris. U.S. forces under General John Pershing helped halt the German advance, and on June 6, Pershing ordered a counteroffensive to drive the Germans out of Belleau Woods. U.S. Marines under General James Hartford led the attack against four German divisions positioned in the woods, and by the end of the first day, suffered over 1,000 casualties. For the next 3 weeks, the Marines, backed by Army artillery, launched many attacks, but German General Ludendorff continually brought up reinforcements from the rear, and the Germans attacked our forces with machine guns, artillery, and gas. Finally, on June 26th, our forces prevailed at the cost of nearly 10,000 dead, wounded, or missing.
And on 6 June 1944, now known as D-Day, General Dwight Eisenhower, then Supreme Commander of Allied Expeditionary Forces in World War II, implemented the massive invasion of Europe called Operation Overlord. By the first week of June 1944, Nazi Germany controlled most of Western Europe. Allied forces numbering 156,000 were poised to travel by ship or plane over the English Channel to attack the German army dug in at Normandy, France on June 5. Eisenhower had a window of only 4 days of decent weather in which an invasion would be possible. When bad weather hit the Channel on June 4, Eisenhower considered postponing. Weather conditions were predicted to worsen, and he had thousands of personnel and thousands of tons of supplies that were, in his words, hanging on the end of a limb. After a promising but cautious report from his meteorologist at 9:45 p.m. on June 5, Eisenhower told his staff, "Let's go." That night, Ike composed an inspirational statement that was delivered the next day as a letter to every soldier, sailor, and airman set to embark. In a radio delivery, Eisenhower reminded the men that the eyes of the world are upon them and that their opponents would fight savagely. Ike exhorted them to be brave, show their devotion to duty, and accept nothing less than victory. In closing, he wished his troops good luck and sought the blessings of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. On June 8, 1944, Eisenhower was able to report that the Allies had made a harrowing and deadly but ultimately successful landing on the beaches of Normandy.
Eisenhower was a real leader. He also made a good president. Probably it's related. And on 5 June 1967, the Six-Day War began. Israel had declared its independence as a nation on May 23rd. Israel responded to an ominous buildup of Arab forces along its border by launching simultaneous attacks against Egypt and Syria. Jordan subsequently entered the fray, but the Arab coalition was no match for Israel's armed forces. In 6 days of fighting, Israel occupied the Gaza Strip and the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt, the Golan Heights of Syria, and the West Bank and Arab sector of East Jerusalem, both previously under Jordanian rule. By the time the UN ceasefire took place on June 11th, Israel had more than doubled its size. The UN Security Council called for withdrawal from all occupied regions, but Israel declined, permanently annexing East Jerusalem and setting up military administrations in the occupied territories. Israel let it be known that Gaza, the West Bank and Golan Heights, and the Sinai would be returned in exchange for Arab recognition of the right of Israel to exist and guarantees against future attack. Arab leaders decided on a policy of no peace, no negotiations, and no recognition of Israel, and made plans to defend zealously the rights of the Palestinian Arabs in the occupied territories. And that's how it is today. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Wow, this is quite a story. 29-year-old Bethany Arsenault disappeared on Wednesday night, and search parties and bloodhounds combed the area but found nothing. The next day, family members joined the search, and that's when Arsenault's cousin heard her screaming from inside an abandoned home. The cousin kicked in the back door and saw the abductor starting to stab his cousin and fired several shots from his handgun. When police arrived, they found the body of Scott Thomas in the abandoned home. Thomas had a child with Arsenault and had previously violated a restraining order protecting her. Local police ruled the shooting was justifiable as the cousin acted within state law that allows deadly force to be used to prevent great bodily harm or death.
Thanks, Colonel. This story is all too common, and as society's nerves are stretched to the max, it continues to get worse. I tell all my students that the majority of personal defense has nothing to do with firearms. However, when a firearm is needed, it's a life or death matter, and nothing less will do. To put it all in context, let's go over some stats. According to FBI crime statistics, over 80% of all murder victims knew their attacker. Sometimes it's a coworker, a neighbor, or someone you know casually. But most often, it's a family member. The emotionally charged history in these cases tends to make these murders extremely heinous and violent. In this case, the kidnapper had a romantic history with the victim and a mutual child. Folks, I can't stress to you enough how important it is to choose your friends wisely. Don't date people who are mentally unstable. I know that sounds like common sense, and it is, but too many people ignore the warning signs and fall in love with violent abusers. If you don't do anything else, please learn to trust your gut instincts. Your instincts are the sum total of every experience you've ever had, combined with how you reacted to them. Most often, we don't even realize we're learning things because they tend to happen subconsciously. But every time you experience something negative, your brain categorizes it and tucks it away for later use. When I look at the times in my life when I've made mistakes, I usually had a feeling, that tiny voice inside me that said, "Skip, are you sure you want to be doing this?" When you ignore that tiny voice of wisdom, there's a chance you'll find yourself in a situation like the woman in today's story. So, my number one rule is this: always trust your gut. Fortunately for this woman, her cousin had good instincts and had the presence of mind to go armed into a potential fight. He saw the danger and acted decisively and heroically to save his cousin's life. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this Louisiana man for his courage and willingness to fight to protect today's victim.
Our movie of the month is A Homeless Teen Defends a Deaf-Blind Man Who Changes His Life Forever. Amazing movie. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, former Director of National Intelligence Rick Grenell will join us to take a look at the future. Then we'll talk about the border situation on the southern border, and we'll review the Battle of the Month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Now, please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes for the Front Lines of Freedom on this 16th anniversary show. Stand tall, be proud, Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.